Christian Parenting.
Welcome to the Living Wholehearted Podcast. We are Jeff and Tara Mattson, a husband and wife team who is shrinking the integrity gap in our own lives and helping others do the same. I'm a leadership and organizational development coach, and Tara is a licensed marriage and family therapist.
We believe that if you have a following, you are a leader, and how you lead matters. Whether you are leading in the home, work, or community, we are bringing you biblical, clinical, and relational wisdom to help you in every relationship that matters most to you. None of us do this perfectly, but we are leaning into the reality of our humanity and profound wisdom of grace. We're back and we are talking about friendship during our relationship series. And we've got a new rhythm here at Living Wholehearted Podcast this year. We just are going deeper and longer episodes, and we're airing them every other week with more of our Living Wholehearted team and Jeff and I. And then we'll do intentional interviews with key experts that we trust, and we want to be able to bring their voice to the table. But you're going to hear a lot more from us this year, and we hope that you stick around, subscribe, share this with friends. And so today I have Connie Armerding, who's on our team. She's also a friend of mine. We have a dual relationship, which we're going to talk about today a little bit about the pros and cons of doing that. But in terms of friendship, you want to check out last episode as we talked more about healthy friendships and myths and just the realistic expectations that we can have for our friendships. Today we're going to talk about when we're struggling in our friendships and boundaries and where we need to discern to end a friendship, when we need to get coaching and counseling and all of those packaged together. So Connie, welcome back. So glad to have you. When we start thinking about just where friendship can be such a gift, we talked about having give and take friendships. When do you start seeing it become a tension where even as a friend or even as a coach, when you're walking with your clients and you're seeing like this friendship isn't able to contain or hold the level of pain and hurt or things that I'm holding or my client's holding? Where is that tension? Because a lot of people, I'll just say the myth that I hear all the time, especially in the church, is if we all just could be better friends and love each other better, then we wouldn't need counselors and coaches anymore. And I'm like, if there was no sin in the world, then maybe we wouldn't need counselors and coaches. I don't think we'll be having a job in heaven, Connie. But where do you see the line between friendship and when it's time to get a counselor or a coach to help me in some of the places I'm going through?
Oh, that's a great question. And I don't know that it's a formula, but I think as we start to uncover our own stuck places, or we're bumping into something over and over again, an unhealthy mindset or trauma that surfaced from our past that we haven't dealt with, I think a way that we can love and honor our friends is to not put them in a place to solve something for us that maybe is not their expertise. So we all need friends who are empathetic, who listen, who love us, and who show up. Absolutely. But there is, because of the sin of the world, because of our own stories of brokenness or things that have happened to us, we need help untangling some of those things in some of those places. And I'm so grateful for people who have invested the time in their life to do this work, to help people do that. So I think when you pursue professional help, whether it's through counseling or with coaching, it's a different container than a friendship, because you're going and it's all about you. You're untangling your stuff. There's no mutuality in counseling and coaching, and it's on purpose, right? Because it's a focused time and period to work something out so that you can continue to be healthy and to be a good friend and to hold that for other people. But I think we put too much expectation on friendship sometimes when we're dealing with things that, they're too hard to hold. So at Living Wholehearted, one of the things we say is like, get your baggage to carry on size. And so I think when you're encountering something that is so heavy, that it needs help, to get professional help to do that. It's not like it's all just going to go away, right? Wherever we go, there we are. We're going to work through this stuff, but get to a place that's manageable. And then as we move back into friendship in a rhythm where there's a give and take and they can help us continue to stay healthy. I just think understanding like when we need more and who is equipped to do that for us and with us. And I think it really is clear that friendship is about mutuality. Healthy friendship, there's give and take. If you're, and I know that's not always going to look the same in every season. I understand that. But when you're encountering something that is, you're needing help to untangle and to work, to pursue the help that is available, to go do that for a season and take that pressure off of the friendship. Because when friendship, people put that pressure there, sometimes it can't hold it. And then we're dealing with more sadness and grief. So just understanding what's needed.
Yeah, so good, Connie, because I mean, the research is clear. And after 20 years of working in confidential spaces and executive coaching and in trauma therapy in marriages and helping women work through sexual abuse and sexual betrayal, I mean, so much trauma. The key is that we are going to do better in our healing journey if we have friends who come around and help us, that are praying for us, that are listening to us. I call those our venting friends, and I work hard with my clients to kind of start practicing, like, who can be your person who you can just vomit? They're not going to try to fix it, and they can just hold it. But then in therapy or in coaching, then we're being more of a guidance. Some people think that helpers are just listening, and that is actually not true. We're trained and have, especially with the neuroscience and the way that we understand change happens, there's a lot that we're doing very intentionally in our offices to help somebody go through a process of healing. And one of the intentional things you said is it's a one-way street on purpose. Mm-hmm. Because if I expose something to a mutual relationship, there's a different expectation than if it's given to a confidential counselor or an executive coach who's going to hold that for me. Mm-hmm. And I know that it won't break the relationship. It's a paid professional boundary. But in a friendship, there's a bigger risk. And we're not saying don't share with a friend, but you need to be thoughtful about who can hold that with you and almost ask permission. I always ask my clients to make sure that they ask their friends specifically as we talk through who could maybe be the few, the two to three that could hold this journey with them. Maybe they're going through a divorce. Maybe they're really processing and grieving their childhood for the first time. Maybe they're going through a massive grief and process with a teenage kid who is really struggling. Being able to ask a friend and say, would you be on this journey with me? Would you be one of my prayer people? Would you be one of my listening partners? And then I've got counseling too, helps to balance out the expectations. And it diversifies, as we talked about last time, the weight of our stories and our needs instead of putting it all in one person. So good and so important. I hear somebody's voice. I sound schizophrenic when I say that out loud, but I'm hearing somebody think about like, okay, great. But what if I don't have any friends that could be my listening, venting? Like, that's why I'm in coaching. That's why I'm in counseling, is because I don't feel like I can trust people. What would you say to someone who doesn't have people in their life that they would trust with the deeper layer of their story?
That's so good. And this is something, I work with clients on often, is they pursue the coaching relationship because they're like, I need a place to learn how to do this well. I want to grow these skills within myself. They're identifying, okay, I have people in my life, but I don't think they're healthy and I don't think it's where I want to stay. And it's not about just cutting people out, but it's getting clear about the future. Mm. So really thinking about the present and the future while holding our story from the past, but really moving forward. What do I want to pursue in my life? Who do I want to become? And a lot of that has to do with our relationships, the things that keep us up at night, our not wanting to be alone, really building in the right direction. So really being clear about developing the skills of initiating, naming, what do I want what are those things that I value? What do I value in relationship? What am I looking for? Because I think we need to be choosy with our friends, right? I think we need to be kind to everyone we meet. Yes, we're called to do that. But we don't have to be all things to all people. And we can get clear about what we want. And if we never specify that and we aren't clear about moving forward and what we're looking for, we're probably not going to meet the target, right? We're just going to aim at just a really broad spectrum and might not be satisfied with our result. So being clear about what I want, what that looks like, these are the traits, the qualities, and then start to observe the people around you. Oh, I really like that, how that person leads in their organization, and they're full of integrity. And I see how this person really loves well. They love their spouse really well, and they're a really attentive parent. Like, oh, I wanna learn and be like that. Someone who's really like committed to being a lifelong learner, and someone who has really thoughtful conversations. Whatever your list is, your unique list is, getting clear about that, observing the people around you, and then, as we mentioned last time, like playing the long game, right? Thinking about, okay, I want to pursue certain types of people in my life because I want that for my future. I want to be challenged. I want to be inspired. I want to be around people who can see me and have capacity to know me. And so that's going to take some initiation. That's going to take some personal development and resilience, right? Because the people might not have capacity to invest in you that way. They don't like you, or there's something's wrong with you, but maybe they're just seasons, we'll talk about that in a little bit, like the seasons of our life. What season am I in? But I think getting clear about what you want and not expecting it to happen to you, you get to be an active agent in pursuing the life that you want to build through prayer, through wisdom, discernment, through someone kind of helping pull those things out. So yeah. And it's amazing to see once people get clear on that, how quickly traction.
Yes. It's so funny. I think everybody wants a good friend. And I think if we're willing to risk, that's part of us coaching people to kind of practice and initiate and then open the door. And then we have to kind of wait and see. So I have this paradigm that helped me years ago when I was trying to work both with survivors of abuse as well as kind of for the play therapy model of how do we teach kids how to be a little bit more careful. Because in Christian paradigm, we often teach and have learned that it's our job to be nice to everybody. And we need to be the one who, you know, turns the other cheek. And yes, Jesus is really changing everything upside down in terms of a tit for tat or constantly seeking revenge with one another. But Jesus does not model a lack of boundaries, and he definitely doesn't model being a pushover. And so I have worked hard to help clients, and probably this comes from my own story, Connie, because I was the kid and the girl who was nice to everybody. And honestly, I didn't even know who were my besties and my close friends and who were strangers and somebody that would harm me, because everybody was on the same playing field, which looked really godly and kingdom, you know, mindset. But in the end, it's not the healthiest way to live, especially as the seasons change. So it came up with this paradigm of red light, green light, or red light, yellow light, green light, thinking of a traffic light, and helping us discern what kind of friends, and usually we don't know if someone, what kind of friend they are until we go through conflict. Oh, fun, right? Like you have to go through conflict, and conflict comes in lots of different small sizes and big sizes, but I want to walk through those three different paradigms. And for the sake of me not talking the whole time, I'll maybe take one and then I'll toss one to you, okay? And then we can toss back and forth, Connie. But I'll start with a green light friend. Those green light friends, and hopefully I'm a green light friend. Like that's my goal and what I'm trying to coach my clients to become, and I hope and teach my daughters. But green light friends and green light people are people who are human. They're honest about where they're at. So if I get feedback from someone, I can receive it and I can say, I am sorry, I can own something, I can change my behavior to adjust to not harm anymore. We can work through conflict, not around it. We don't avoid it. And there's this process of knowing that we're going to bump up against each other as human beings, but overall, my heart is good towards you and I'm teachable, you're teachable. And over time, we move through conflict, we build trust, and we get more and more confident and actually more confident in our intimacy as friends and trusting one another through thick and thin. And it only comes through conflict. So green light friends, over time, we learn best about them when we've gone through conflict and how they handle conflict, how I handle conflict, and do we make it through it and with actually more love and more care for one another. So that would be a green light friendship. You want to talk about the yellow light and what a yellow light looks like?
So a yellow light friend is someone who, yeah, I mean, you've gone through conflict or you've been around them enough to have some data to work with to say, oh, you always say yes and then you don't show up. Or I told you that thing in confidence and now a lot of people know it. And so you're assessing times that you have extended trust and then it hasn't, some level of it's been broken. And it doesn't mean they're horrible, malicious people. It doesn't mean you're not in relationship with them anymore. But it's that you've talked about this before, like moving them into a different category. So a green light friend, as you mentioned, are the people close to you and you trust. These are your thickest thieves. Like, okay, these are my go-tos. I can trust them with anything. I can come as I fully as I am. With a yellow light friend, something's happened where there's been some kind of fracture, not that it's beyond repair. So yellow light friends can move back into a green light if there's repair and there's work and there's honesty. And they also can move into the red light zone if it continues to get worse and there's more harm done. But I think it's just like what a yellow light represents. It's slow down, yeah. Caution. Let's assess, let's really look at this and say, is this wisdom for me to stay as close in this relationship as I have been? So it's just moving them to a different category and kind of like time will tell whether maybe they'll just stay there and there's room for them just to stay there and you interact occasionally, or if there really is a growth curve, because we change, people change, right? And can get more healthy or more unhealthy. But if there's change, to know which direction they're moving and just being aware of that, kind of discerning and slowing down enough to assess what's real and then determine, yeah, if it's the kind of person you want to continue to invest in and what that looks like for the future.
I love it. And actions don't always match with their words in that yellow light category. The Bible calls them foolish, and that is just a maturity level. That's all. And, you know, maybe there's tears and remorse of, I'm sorry I hurt you, and that's such a bummer, but the actions don't follow up. And so we see that over time. I would also say it's important to try to talk to a yellow light friend first before we just kind of, you know, put them in the category, but see if there's room for them to grow. But over time, you'll see a consistency. And, you know, they say they'll show up at 12 and they show up at 2, or like you said, they don't show up at all. So we give them grace, but we don't give them the best of who we are, our time, our energy, our expectations. And then that red light person's probably not a friend. We're not going to call them a friend. They have been moved into a category that they're unsafe. Red light people are what the Bible calls a wolf in sheep's clothing. And they're actually using the friendship or you as a means to an end. And it might not be as overt or obvious at first. And oftentimes they can be very charismatic, the narcissists, but over time, you just recognize that they take delight almost in gossiping about you or getting you to trust them and then flipping things upside down. And it's really feels judgmental to put someone in this category, you know, and we're not going around and telling them, hey, you're a red light person. we don't need to do that. But for us in our own world, especially between us and God and maybe our closest people, we can process and get a validation that the boundaries are strong and high. We need a high fence. We often have to be more firm with these people. I had a red light friend, and maybe Connie, you can give an example too from your life, and we can kind of make this more tangible, because it sounds so like, gosh, you know, who's red light? But I had a red light friend that every time I sat with her, she would pursue me like crazy, like text me and give me gifts and affirm me with verbal, you know, love. And then I would find out later that she would be talking about me through in a group that I was like, huh, that's so confusing. I wonder why she's doing that. Again, I have a history of being too nice and kind of extending my love very broadly. And so it just felt very confusing. So then I would confront her in a very gentle way, but just say, hey, I heard that you were saying these unkind things about me. And then she'd be like, no, I wasn't. And then she would talk badly about those women, right? Like, it was just this, and I just felt icky. It felt icky. And I gave her too much grace for too long. And that's just part of the practice over time. I wouldn't give that person a time of the day today. I would just not, the wall would go up. But I invested too many years in trying to help pursue giving her the benefit of the doubt, all the things that I thought. And eventually the pattern was clear all along. Part of that maybe was her own mental health and her own trauma. It was part of the grace that I was giving her, knowing she came from a really abusive backdrop and thinking maybe this could be the time she could learn and be a part of a healthier. But she was creating havoc for a group of women and creating kind of that, you know, pinning people against each other. And it wasn't, again, overtly she was delighting in evil, but she was not willing to hear feedback, and she continued to wreak havoc. So I got to the point where I did not engage any longer. And that person is not in my life any longer, I don't know, for the last 10 years. But it's one of those sad things that you kind of wonder once in a while, like, I wonder if she ever got help. She would be one who would desperately need counseling but would never go. Was kind of above that at that time in her life. Do you have an example that would be maybe tangible? And if not, if it's not different, because that seems to be a common scenario for a lot of women.
I have a situation that comes to mind, just a friend who I lived near and we were getting to know. But I think as we were developing friendship, I was seeing some red flags, but I think I ignored them because I was like, well, no, I need to be pursue and be nice and in all situations, which be kind, yes, but not give too much of myself. But I think when there were a few things that I blew past, some warning signs that I blew past, and that, like, in order for her to have what she needed and to feel in control and safe, it put me in a really bad spot. And so, or just really inconvenienced me, or wasn't thinking about, like, my family and my kids. And so there were a few things that I think I was trying to be all things, all people, you know. We weren't really close necessarily, but investing in this relationship, but I ignored the moments where I was like, okay, this doesn't feel right. And then we had an altercation, which, was just really hard, and put my kids in a really bad situation, and there was just a lot of emotion, and it was really difficult, and I'd never really been in a situation like that. And I remember, even after it happened, thinking, this is my growth curve now, this was years and years ago, but feeling like, oh, I need to fix this. And then but when I actually was, like, slowed down enough to be like, none of this adds up, and it's not my job to get her to see something differently or to change. Like, I don't deserve to be treated this way. I think there was this, like, I don't want that, and so I'm not going to partner anymore. And so, yeah, it was uncomfortable, definitely. But that's a situation that comes to mind. I think I was trying to make something work, thinking like I was always thinking I'm the problem. Like, I need to fix this. I need to do more. Which, those are good questions to ask. I mean, usually there's always things I can work on, no doubt. But just, I think the narrative of a red light person is they're not willing to take ownership, and it's always going to be someone else's fault. There's not that understanding or that self-reflection. And so, just being able to say, like, this is, I'm not willing to do this anymore. This is costing me too much. This is unhealthy. This is putting me in an unsafe place in my family. And so it just needs to end. But the situations are difficult, but it took me a while to get to that clear point. And I think now I would see those things earlier. I wouldn't ignore those flags along the way. It would make it easier just to not open that door of relationship. But because I didn't pay attention, it got to that point.
Right. Right. I think it's important for us to ask the Lord. I think He's very clear sometimes. I think we're afraid to ask because we think He's going to be like, of course you need to be their friends. But often He's releasing us. He's like, I'm not asking you to pursue. In fact, they're sucking energy and distracting you from the things that I'm actually calling you to. And so that is just, it seems oversimplistic sometimes, but often to just pause and to go, I seem to keep running into this pattern, run it by some of your inner circle people, your green light people, get their feedback, as well as ask the Lord, is this somebody that you're even asking me to invest in? And then knowing how to set boundaries is really hard, Connie. And it's one of the things we coach a lot of people on, is how do you do it with grace and with kindness? True offenders, working in the abuse world, true offenders that are very narcissistic and unwilling to see beyond their own need, you're a means to an end. Those boundaries feel mean, but you have to set them up in order to get them to close. But most of the time in friendships, it's not that overt, and it can get kind of funky. And so let's give language to some boundaries. Even I think about Paul and Barnabas, like there was just a time where they realized they had a disagreement. This is not about red light people, but they had a disagreement in terms of the call that they each had. And they just decided to part ways and say their season of their work together was done. And that was okay. And that was good. Right. That there are endings and seasons and closure in our stories. And it doesn't always have to be a bad thing. So language around ending things is really important, and what we try to help women with quite often. I'm happy to take a stab at it, but I love to toss the coin to you because you're so articulate, Connie. How might you close up a friendship? That it's time. Maybe someone knows, like, hey, it's time to end this, rather than just ghosting them, which is usually what women want to do. They just want to ignore and not return calls, right, and pretend that I'm not getting them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think sometimes it is a real clear conversation. I think there are those moments. And then other times I think there are ways that you're just not as – you're not ghosting them, you're communicating, but the way you're communicating is changing. So to use the language of concentric circles, the people that are close to us, if someone is moving from an inner circle to another circle, or even with Paul and Barnabas, it's like they're doing different things. It doesn't have to be a negative ending, but I think that the thing specifically with boundaries is I'm not telling someone else what they're going to do. I'm deciding what I'm going to do, and I'm being clear about that. And so, that's what I would communicate to someone. If something is, if they're asking me to do something, maybe they're asking me to do something that I don't have capacity for, or I don't want to partner with for whatever reason. I think instead of saying like, you make me feel some way, I'm not, you know, using I statements, I don't have capacity in the season, or I'm unavailable. And I think not quantifying it with so much information. I think a clear boundary can be when you have been really close with someone and it's shifting, to communicate kindly and clearly, but not too much. I think sometimes we overshare. We share too much of our life, and then inadvertently invites other people to give us feedback about something. Maybe we don't want them to be a feedback partner. If we don't want someone to be a feedback partner and to be in that inner space, be concise with what you're communicating. And it's about what you're doing. And you're not asking for their permission. I think it can be challenging, but to do it well, just to have our yes be yes and our no be no, and to not be as accessible and available. And I think this is as we grow to be healthier leaders or healthier people, and then specifically we're in leadership roles, is we can't be accessible to everybody all the time. And sometimes people want more than we're willing to give them, often, but that's where you have to be clear and determine what that boundary is. And the thing about boundaries is they can change, which is good. But the boundary serves you in a season to help make things clear. And then if the relationship moves to a more healthy place, then maybe those boundaries can soften a little bit. But you have to be clear about what you're wanting and then communicating appropriately. And you're not responsible for their response.
That's key. You're not responsible for their response. Yeah, I appreciate that language of it's not you telling them about their life. You're just communicating your choices and your ask. And I often will use, if you've been on the podcast or listening, you'll hear me share this all the time in every case. It's kind of next to EMDR. It's like Windex, Lit the Green, My Big Fat Greek Wedding, where I kind of squirted on everything. But it's the ACT model. And it's a really good way to set boundaries, even soft boundaries, with someone I love, and that's a green light. And I got this beautiful sunshine coming in on me right now. I'm in Oregon in the middle of winter, so this is lovely. But ACT model, acknowledge the emotion. So being able to say, I know this is a hard, this is hard for you, because they're like, I don't want to lose you. You're my best friend, or whatever they're like articulating. You're my only person, or don't give up on us, or right. So acknowledge the emotion for them. It's just an empathetic way that calms their brain and says, I hear you. So I know this is hard to hear, or I know you really want our friendship to continue. Communicate the limit, which is, but I'm in a different season and things are changing for me. And then target an alternative to say, we can maybe reopen this conversation at another time, but for now, this is how it has to be. And that takes a lot of courage to say, but it does shift the power a little bit to say, I'm just communicating my part, and now you're responsible for how you want to respond to that. And like you said, we're not responsible. And at that point, then my actions need to match my words. I always think about friendship breakups like a relationship breakup, and how uncool it is your boyfriend, girlfriend. I don't know if you remember back to your dating years, Connie, but I was really bad. I'd like break up and then we'd still be friends. And it was just cruel. It was not nice to have kind of a relationship, but not be together. And now I don't even think people date in the Christian circles. It's just there's no clarity. It's just really vague. And it's actually kind of cruel. It's the most loving. Clarity is kindness. And it's the most loving to continue to talk and to say, here's where we are. Here's where I am. And here's what I can give and what I can't give. So wherever somebody is at, and in green light friendships, we can do that with ease. We're doing that regularly. I mean, you and Connie, or Connie, you and I do that all the time. I'm like, sorry, I can't see you for 3 months, you know, because, or we just Marco Polo and satisfied with that, right? But that's kind of the nature of green light relationships, is you get to talk, you get to be honest, you get to show up as yourself, and you're respected, and your no thank you is honored. But know that red light people will still push. And you only need to set your boundary firmly one or two times, and then it's that you're disconnecting. You do not need to respond any longer. And that's where somebody can hook you back in. And it's a game. It's a game to see if they can keep you playing by continuing to text you or blast you with emails or call you and, you know, leave you messages. So work hard at that point to set more firm boundaries. And that's really more of a toxic relationship. Majority of our friendships don't fall in that category, but that can be a part of many of your stories.
Yeah. So I think just friendships are such a key part of life. And they look different in various seasons. So I think about seasons of being a college graduate, not yet married, you know, this in-between season where had some more time. I was living with roommates. I kind of got to choose my own schedule and just decide where I wanted to invest my time and my money. And yeah, those are really sweet seasons. I feel like just taking the time to be able to, I have some really fun memories of trips I took with friends and staying up late, just not having as much limitation and need a pull in my life. It really was the first time that I was like, okay, like I'm an adult. I get to adult with other friends who have freedom to make these choices. So it was really fun to learn and develop and grow in those seasons. So I'm really grateful for that season of life. And then moving into relationships and people getting married. And so navigating couple friends, and then how do I still make time for friends inside, like honoring what my marriage needs and putting that in the right order. And then developing a family, and then like the demands of children, the amount of children that that you end up having, whether it's 1, 2, 4, 5, I don't know. But just, yeah, the season of like, how do I still hold these things? And then as those children grow and the different seasons of their development and the amount of need. So, I mean, even just within the realm of parenting, I mean, I don't have college kids yet, but I have, you know, two that are in high school, one's junior high, and one's about to be in junior high. So this tension of like, we're really full and really busy. It looks different than what it looked like when they were all home and I was home. So yeah, I'm curious just some of your experiences in those different seasons and what that looked like, Tara, for you, and how you made time to invest in friendships, and with the practical limitations that were around you, what were some creative ways that you invested and invited friends to do life with you in those spaces?
Great question. And I appreciate the, like, they look different. I think that's just something we have to say very clearly, that not everybody just assumes, but you're grieving at each stage. Like, there's a loss to the freedom. I remember being married to Jeff and being like, I have to ask you what I'm going to do. Like, not ask him permission. That sounded really weird. But just to honor him in our marriage, like, his time right. and my time, I appreciated if he asked me if he was going to go hang out with his buddies, right? And there's a loss of some freedom there to try to do marriage. And then you're like trying to find couple friends and, you know, I would love her, but he wouldn't love him. You know, there's just that funky dynamic there. And so I appreciate you just recognizing that it's different and knowing what season you're in is really part of step one. Like, where am I at and what kind of room do I have for friends? Do I have room for many or do I have room for like two? And who do I want those people to be? And everyone else, I have to say no. So that's been a practical step for me at every season. When I had babies, I felt that loneliness factor. But I, again, as I alluded to, I moved around a lot. I learned really key. If I wanted to have friends, I was going to go up and be like, hi, my name's Tara. What's your name? That was the way. So it's the same in the season with children. I was thinking about what do I want to do as a mom with my kiddos and then trying to meet women. So going to what our church at the time called the Hearts at Home or being able to go to a Bible study where you could drop off your kiddos and connect with women then. Or I was going to story time in the local library and meeting people. Or I know many people will meet some of their closest friends coming out to those newborn groups that the hospitals put together. So there's just these phases where you're looking around going, Lord, who? And then when my girls got into elementary school, that's when I started Courageous Girls. It was an intentional way to say, I want good friends and I want to model good friendship to my girls, but I don't have a lot of time. Like, I was launching Living Wholehearted at the time. I had a full private practice and I wanted to be a good mommy. So what I was doing is kind of bundling. Like, where can I kill like five, you know, birds with one stone where I can connect with other moms that are in a similar season as me? And then I've always asked older women, I've always asked a couple mentors, which are different than friends. They always become friends in a way. But in every season, I've asked the Lord, who, Lord, could I learn from who's just a little further ahead of me? And I've always made coffee dates with them. And that was kind of my time of asking, will you pour into me? So I don't have a give and take. And that's where counselors and executive coaches, I've always had those in my life as well, which is more of the professional side. So those in the younger years, those are a couple of the things that I did. I don't know if you want to add any more before we move to the older seasons, but.
Yeah. Well, I think about the years when my kids were young. So I had four kids under five. I just owned it. I was an angsty stay-at-home mom. It was a season I was called to, but I was.
I think that's a bumper sticker. We should make those and sell those. Angsty stay-at-home mom. Just own it. Put it on your car.
I think we're not alone. But in that season of life, I had some good friends that there was four of us and our kids were all the same age and we lived within 2 miles of each other. And we shared school drop off and pick up. And literally it would be, we'd text in the morning and be like, whose house today? Okay. I'm going to get the donuts. Who's going to get Little Caesars?
I love this.
Are we going to go swim? And everyone we'd get there and then the kids would destroy the house, but have a great time. They were with friends. We were with friends. And then we'd all pick it up, you know, we'd all rally it together and everyone helped pick up. And then we'd go get the older ones and do nap time. But it was, and it was rinse, repeat. And I feel like we did the same thing every day. We were in this container together, and even though our personalities are very different and we don't all live in the same place, some are in Colorado, some California, I'm in Oregon, but there's a sweet, sweet, sweet relationship that we share, and our kids know and love each other so well. So they got to know these friends who were kind of like mom one, two, three to them. It would help pick up and do different things, but it was survival. And so, and what I love, one of my friends, she had a story like yours where she moved a lot. So she got really good at just pursuing what she wanted. And so we joke because she'll tell the story of like, oh, I had you guys picked out. I knew who I was like that one, that one, that one. And she just would show up and she would, we didn't even know we had.
That's what I did too.
But it was so great. And I'm so grateful for it. And that same friend, since moving and being in different states, she's really good at pursuing and maintaining relationships. She's very disciplined. She always is like cleaning her house and doing all these things just in order. But I remember when I was with her in these years, she had friends from other seasons who lived in different states, but it was like, this is my time that I call Alicia and, you know, and I'm going to do these things. And so I've been on the receiving side of now that being in a different place, she makes time and she's intentional, but learned that from her story and decided what she wanted. So I feel like there's so many things I gleaned from that season in initiating and asking and hosting and, in sharing the load. And that saved me in that season. I mean, it was so sweet. Our kids are a lot older now. And so it looks different, but that's just a practical way in which it was inviting people in, being willing to share. I mean, we all shared that load. Some houses were cleaner than others. It didn't matter. It was like, we were just kind of like, okay, this is how we do community. It was really formative. And so, I would say if you're in that season, which can be angsty and hard, find people, invite them in and share the load together, because it's difficult. It's challenging, but it's a season. It won't be like that forever.
Yeah. And I do think that's unique. And I just want to say that out loud, Connie, because it's beautiful. And if you can get that or be the initiator, do it. And yet if you can't, that's okay. You're not missing out. It's just find one other person, and maybe it's one day a week and not every day. It's just giving samples of how it really is about intentionality and you discerning what you want. I mean, sometimes the introvert is like, no, that sounds like hell to me. So I'm like, but at the same time, every woman is hungry for connection, that whether you're an introvert or an extrovert. And so being able to just throw all your kids together and love on each other and build that community in the mess. I also think the woman who really needs her house to be all put together before you all show up needs a little help from you ladies to just show up. So she needs new experiences to realize that she's loved, and even when her laundry is spread out throughout her living room. She might never have it out there, but you know. It's the practice, because her upbringing probably taught her she needs to have it all together. And so new experiences with friends that say, you know what, we love you, not because you're all put together, but because you're you. And that's part of the practice of friendship as women, especially Christian women, this expectation that we're supposed to have, even when we host, like you're supposed to have this grand spread. And I loved it. You were like, someone's just going to bring in the donuts and we'll maybe all do each other's laundry together. So I say it's a beautiful image. Pray for this. Ask God for the who. But even if you don't have it that way, God's got someone for you in the community that you can connect with and start connecting with. But don't do this life alone in that stage of life, because there is a lot of depression and anxiety that just comes because of the hormones and the needs of children. So, okay, let's fast forward to now. So let's switch over to the next season. Okay, so we're in this season, you and I, where our kids are older. In fact, I think they all have their own schedules and are busier than Jeff and I sometimes. And so we only have 4 in our family. And you have, I don't know, 20? No, I'm kidding.
I get some days.
So, yeah, but you have 4 kids, 2 twins. So they're at the same stage at the same time, going through everything at the same moment. So this is a different dynamic in that we are counting the days that our kids are gone. I'm years, like a few years out from being empty nester. And so I'm treasuring every moment, trying to be intentional with whatever I'm getting from my kiddos, because they also have their lives, their school, their homework, their youth groups, their sports. So what are the ways you're staying connected with friends, and kind of let's give some key practical tips to a few moms who are like, yes, please help me.
Yeah, that's great. Well, I feel like I live my life in the car, specifically between 4 until 9. I have 4 kids and the twins are about to drive soon, so there'll be a little bit of a reprieve. But this last few years, they're all athletes, which is super fun. I'm a sports mom. I love it. I love to support them in their activities, but it's a lot of practices. It's a lot of games. They all play multiple sports. So I'm doing life in the car, which has a gift in time with them. I know that will shift. But as I'm waiting or as I'm driving to and from or waiting to pick up, using that time, multitasking. Mm-hmm. So we do live in the digital age, and I think there's some drawbacks to that, but there are some benefits. Some of those benefits is ways to connect with people, whether they're down the street and I just can't be with them in person, or whether they're another state away or even another country. So you mentioned Marco Polo. Marco Polo is a fun app that you can video record and send to somebody. And then when they have time, they can watch it. So you're this conversation that's ongoing, but you get to enter into it when you have time. I also will use Voxer once in a while, which is just an audio app on your phone. Or even I love the new feature just within text messages where you can record a voice memo.
Yes.
So I think just taking that time to really send an encouraging word, to give an update, to check in. Because right now I don't have open evenings the way that I used to. I mean, part of our kind of family code to be able to give the best of who we are to the people that matter the most is that we try not to plan, Taylor and I try not to plan activities throughout the week. unless it, you know, it doesn't conflict with being present with our family. So I'm an extrovert and I'm a high merchant. And so I want to connect with my people. So this is just a new creative way that has provided for that. When I'm driving 30 minutes in the car or 20 minutes in the car, I can have a conversation. And maybe it isn't, if the worlds collide and we sync up and we can actually have a fun conversation, that's great. But that doesn't always happen because
right.
of time zones and schedules. But it's a way to still connect and be intentional and to let someone I love know that I'm thinking about them mm-hmm. and sharing what matters to me, asking questions about what's going on for them, to foster that relationship, to pour in, even if it looks different than a previous season.
It's so good because going back to a couple of the other things that we've said along the way that really apply here is really investing in the long game. Because even if we don't get that quality time or really those experiences together with our friends at this season, we're investing and putting seeds for when our kids are all launched and we'll have had some history together. And I think that's really key because so many women show up, at least over the years in my office, with their kids are launched and they really just got a huge chunk of time and don't really know who to connect with because they only connected with the parents during the basketball games or the basketball season, right? Like it was all around their kids. And so really being thoughtful and thinking about long-term and also thinking about who do I really like and enjoy being with, that's an okay, godly thing to ask. I often kind of name, you know, unhealthy, toxic, even coming from trauma world, it's an I have to thinking. And the healthier mm-hmm. we get and the more free and in the process of healing, we move to I want to, or what do I want to do? And that can sound really weird and even unbiblical to some people. So we'll be able to chew on that. Maybe we'll do a podcast just on that alone at some point. But it's really true that when God's not asking for our obedience out of a have to, He's like, I want you to desire to love me and receive my love. There's a joy in healthy relationships. It's a give and take. And so it's a thank you. Thank you for leaving me a Marco Polo. It's been a while versus I can't believe it's been a while. You haven't left me one for a while. Like shift right. the entitlement and not taking things personal in this season and recognizing we're all busy. We're all trying to connect, but we tried. Even if it was just a 2-minute voice text. So being able mm-hmm. to appreciate the efforts and making small efforts and not feeling like it has to be a weekend away for, you know, in the hills of Colorado, but just more of a, I'm thinking about you. I'm praying for you. Here's a couple updates of what we're into right now. And in the long run, when we're in the empty nest season, and that's what a lot of our clients are in that season, there is more time and friendships become really important, but there's just more time to invest in those friendships. Okay, so we've been talking a lot about friendship for a couple hours now from last episode to this episode. And grace and really understanding who you are, what you need in friendship, communicating, understanding whether friendship, where they fall in the realm of healthy or unhealthy. It's okay to use your words in healthy friendships. We can show up as we are in the season we're in. And sometimes the season comes to an end and it's over. The friendship's over. It served its purpose. And not all friendships are meant to last a lifetime. So I think I want to just say that out loud, Connie. and that it's okay. It doesn't mean you failed. It doesn't mean they failed you, but just sometimes that's all God had for you in that season and that time. And so treasure it for what it was. And there might be some grieving and letting go and just remembering what you appreciated about that friendship at the time and when it served. But our book that we recommend, and Connie and I take our clients through often, is Necessary Endings by Henry Cloud. And it really does help. It's actually for organizational leaders, but it helps us really come to a better understanding of how we deal with goodbyes and how we understand what is healthy and unhealthy and how we really invest in the to grow good fruit. And that's really what we want to think about with our friendships, is where is the energy going? Where do I need to prune? And where I need to let myself invest so that there can be some beautiful, I think you use the analogies of rose bushes, but beautiful fruits, and invest the nourishment in the direction of the friends that God is asking me to invest in. So before we close, Connie, I always land with you. One last thing you want to share, just even about you or a story that would be encouraging and a good reminder for people as they're thinking about their friendships in 2024.
Yeah. Well, I just want to leave with an action step is what's coming to mind. As you've been listening to this podcast about friendship, if there's just somebody that's coming to mind that you really appreciate, or even a friend that, you haven't communicated what they value, what they mean to you and how much you value them, to initiate, reach out, send a Marco Polo or set up a coffee date, write them a card. Just, it's so important to communicate just how people have impacted us and just the value of friendship, the value of people alongside us. And maybe it's even someone you haven't talked to in a long time, and maybe you live in a different place and it's not practical that you're going to do life in the same way. But if I just trust that if there's someone who keeps coming to mind, don't dismiss that. Lean in, ask the Lord, what are you saying? Like, what can I do to encourage this person? Or maybe there's a rekindling, or maybe there's just someone who needs a word of encouragement to know that you care about them and their investment in your life matters and that you appreciate who they are. So yeah, I just think take the action step. I think this is connected to be the friend you want to have. When someone comes to mind, or when you think something really good and positive about someone else, use your voice to tell them it matters.
Good word. Good word. Well, if you want to connect with us, go to livingwholehearted.com. You'll learn all about our resources, from our counseling to our executive coaching to our Wholehearted Leadership cohorts, where Connie and I lead women's cohorts. You can connect with Connie directly if you're looking for an executive coach that you will love and glean from and will be able to touch every part of your life, your professional and your personal life. Contact Connie at livingwholehearted.com. You can do individual coaching, or you can connect with us through our cohorts. I'm only seeing coaching clients through our cohorts at this time, but we also have a professional counseling team if you're looking at actually doing some real deeper work. The difference between coaching and counseling is basically this. Counseling spends a lot more time looking back and really healing so that you can move into being present in your current relationships. Coaching really does look a little back for just a little bit, but we spend more time really assessing how you're living presently so you can affect the future and the vision of where God's calling you. And so if you need some healing from the past, counseling's a good starting point. If you're feeling ready and kind of more present in your life, and you're needing somebody to continue to help champion you through and to help you align your life with who God's called you to be and what He's calling you to, then you can live and really give you the love that you have to those you say you love the most, working on your friendships and every part of who you are. We're here for you. We love coming alongside you, and this is the work that we do in helping you become who God has called you to be in every area of your life. So until next time, continue to grow and becoming a more wholehearted leader. And we pray that your friendships will continue to be a huge part of your journey along the way.
This podcast is powered by Living Wholehearted, Courageous Girls, and the Christian Parenting Podcast Network. Thank you for joining us in this critical movement of shrinking our integrity gaps between what we preach and live.